With bated breath, he waited, looking and listening. Far off to his right came a low, throaty growl. The bear, if it was a bear, had moved swiftly to flank him. Hookah waited. He looked down and realized that he had spilled out all of the arrows from his quiver. Hands trembling, he retrieved the shafts and slid them back in. Taking deep breaths to calm himself, he peered into the trees to the right. The thing had moved from left to right, circling him. Perhaps the wise thing was to look ahead to where it might be, he thought. He was right. Another low, throaty growl floated from the grove. Hookah heard the dog snarl too, but this sound seemed to be coming from a deep hole. All he could do was point his half-drawn bow in the direction of the growl. He wished with all his heart that the hunters were back, but sundown was far, far off. How angry would my uncle be, he wondered, if I went to a safer place away from this bear? There was no way to know that, of course, but he was on the verge of running as far and as fast as he could. Then he decided to climb the tree. In the tree, he was still near enough to see anything that came near the meat. If it was a bear, he could try shouting and scaring it away. If that didn't work, he could shoot it from a safe perch. Gathering the lance and his bow and arrows, Hookah quickly climbed up. He found a good solid fork higher than the height of two men. There he lodged his lance and found a branch to hang his quiver. And he had a better view of the clearing. As he settled in, he heard another growl. He swung around in time to see a dark figure scurrying through the brush, circling the camp, it seemed. Hookah felt safe in a tree. He made certain of his footing and balance and placed an arrow on a bowstring. The dark figure, he was sure it was a bear, stopped in some low shrubs well within bowshot. He would have to shoot between two trees, but he was certain he could hit it from this distance. The dark figure rose from his hiding place slowly. It was a bear, and it appeared to be looking at him. Perhaps a near miss would scare it away, he thought. Hookah bent his bow, careful aim, and released. His arrow flashed toward the bear, which ducked out of sight. Hookah thought he heard a cry, a startled grunt of surprise, followed by a thrashing in the shrubs. Then there was silence. Wounded animals were dangerous, he had been told. He expected the bear to come after him and try to climb the tree. He prepared another arrow and waited. The silence continued. No more growls, no more movement in the brush. Hookah kept an eye on the place where he last saw the bear, waiting for it to emerge in a fury. Nothing happened. There was no movement anywhere in the grove. Hookah looked around from his high perch. Only a squirrel was moving about in a nearby oak. He kept his bow at the ready. All he could do was wait and wonder if he had killed the bear with one arrow. It didn't seem likely. The sun reached the middle of the sky and began to slide down to the western rim of the prairie. Still Hookah waited, reluctant to leave the safety of the tree. He put away his bow and made himself comfortable, settling himself in a fork of two large branches. A magpie flapped his way through the trees and alighted on the branches above the hanging elk meat, sending his raucous call to all his relatives. Hookah breathed a sigh of relief. That could only mean that there was no more danger from the bear. More and more magpies came, until there was a line of the black and white birds on a cut branch holding up the elk meat. Hookah thought to loose an arrow to frighten them off. Then he realized they were his sentinels. If any kind of danger approached, they would fly off. And even all those magpies together couldn't carry off the meat, so he let them be. The afternoon dragged on, and the shadows grew longer and longer. Hookah decided to climb down. On the ground, he quickly built a fire. The smell of it and the smoke would warn off any animal approaching. The smell of smoke would also let a two-legged enemy know where the camp was, but he decided to take a chance. His friends, the magpies, were still worrying about the meat, and he was certain they would let him know if anything came close. But he kept his weapons at hand nonetheless. Chuka was curious about the bear, if it was a bear. The magpies were unafraid, so he decided to take a look. At the last moment, he grabbed a lance instead of his bow. Caution guided his every move as he carefully went from tree to tree until he reached the brush where the bear had been hiding. His heart pounding, he climbed a tree for a better look. He saw nothing. Back on the ground, he stepped silently through the brush until he found broken stalks and torn up grass and blood. His arrow had found a mark. Wisely, he retreated to his fire, built it up, and waited. The magpies were still fussing over the elk meat. He couldn't let down his guard now. There was a wounded bear out there somewhere. The hunters. Chuka hoped the bear wouldn't see the hunters and attack them. A shout startled him. The hunters were returning from the east, and the bear had run off to the west. Chuka was relieved, and never so glad to see anyone in his life. A buck deer with large antlers lay across a drag pole pulled by two of the hunters. They all looked tired, and Chuka's uncle seemed to be hurt. A questioning glance from Chuka brought out the story. One of them had shot the buck. In his confusion, it ran at their hiding place and trampled Chuka's uncle. It was not a serious injury, Chuka was told, but there was blood. All is well here? Asked Chuka's uncle. Yes, replied Chuka. The meat is still hanging there. We have been away since this morning. Did anything happen? Chuka thought for a moment. He wanted to tell them about the bear, but more than likely, they would not believe him. No, he said, nothing happened, except for the magpies. They are still trying to carry off the meat. The hunters looked at him and chuckled. You have guarded the camp well, one of them said. Chuka smiled. They did not know how true their words were. It would be good if we kept watch tonight, he said. I hear there are bears here. Spoken like a true hunter and a good man, said his uncle. Yes, we will all take turns keeping watch. Bears are very smart and tricky. You never know what they will do, especially if they smell fresh meat. Chuka grew into a fine young man. At his naming ceremony, his father and his uncle gave him the name Naichiji, the Defender. It was a name he never dishonored. Defender was a skilled hunter and a strong warrior. His family was always well fed and dressed, and he saw to the needy as well. As a fighting man, he won many war honors, but he was always a quiet man, never boastful. Of that, his mother and father were very proud. Defender courted and won the love of a fine young woman. They were married, and she gave birth to a daughter. Defender's uncle came with a gift for his granddaughter. He brought an arrow. A bear gave me this, he told the infant, with her mother and father listening, long, long ago. He received it from one of the bravest young men he had ever met, he said. I give it to you now, granddaughter. Hold it in your hand, and let its spirit pass on to you, so that one day you will grow up to be the mother of brave hunters and warriors. It belongs to your father, one of the bravest men I have ever known. Being brave. What is bravery? And why is it a requisite virtue? Many of us believe that the ultimate display of bravery can only happen on a field of battle. Facing the possibility, and sometimes the probability, of death and great bodily harm is, without a doubt, one of the most daunting realities any human being can confront. Bravery, however, needs to be taken in context because life demands it in so many ways. In January of 1951, a 5-year-old boy on the Rosebud Sioux Reservation was sent on a simple errand of taking a bag full of fresh meat to relatives who lived below the hill from him and his grandparents. It was after dark, though there was a full moon, and the relative's house was a 2.5-mile walk on newly fallen snow. The boy was familiar with the road. He had been on it many times, but never alone at night. It was a pleasant evening for January, with just enough of a nip in the air to make the snow crunch under his feet as he walked. The sky was clear, and it was altogether a very beautiful winter night, with the proliferation of stars and the moonlight reflecting off the snow. The boy walked easily, without the least amount of concern. He switched the cloth bag from one hand to the other and began to swing it back and forth with the rhythm of his walking. Somewhere in the distance, a coyote barked, followed by the tremolo cry of a screech owl. Nothing was unfamiliar to the boy, not the coyote or the owl, the starry moonlit night, the snow, the cold, or the land itself. Halfway to the relative's house, however, there arose a slight aberration that caused a tiny inkling of concern. The aberration persisted, and the inkling of concern grew to the first symptoms of fear. The boy, as you recall, was swinging the bag of meat back and forth as he walked. At the back end of the swing, it unexpectedly touched something, ever so slightly. Instantaneously, a swirl of thoughts and images flew through the boy's mind, but he didn't dare alter the pattern of his swinging of the bag. Horrendously large, black, hungry things with frothy white fangs and long, curved claws were predominant among the images in his mind. They were obviously after the bag of meat first, and after that, the boy had two choices, as he saw it. He could drop the bag and run, or he could run with the bag. The second choice seemed the more honorable, because his grandmother had impressed upon him the importance of delivering the meat to the waiting relatives. Even as he pondered his choices, the bag was still touching something at the back end of the swing. The indescribable black things were now going away without a meal. An inspiration flashed through his mind like a shooting star, and before he could stop himself, he was acting on it. He swung the bag backward as hard as he could, after which he intended to run faster than he had ever run in his 5 years on earth. But he didn't have to. A sharp yelp surprised and startled him, and he nearly ran away. But he recognized the yelper. It was his dog. The indescribably relieved boy hugged his dog, and they finished the chore and arrived home to report an uneventful journey. In that same year, a young man from the Winnebago tribe of eastern Nebraska, Sergeant Mitchell Red Cloud, was an American infantry soldier in South Korea. His rifle squad was engaged in an intense firefight with a larger North Korean unit and forced to withdraw. Sergeant Red Cloud took up a rear guard position and protected the withdrawal of his squad. He fired at the oncoming enemy and drew its return fire at himself, thereby enabling his squad to reach a safe position. In the process, Sergeant Red Cloud's position was overrun by the North Koreans and he was killed. He was posthumously awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor.